in all my prayers for all of you. And I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. And that's what we're giving our attention to this morning. And the question this provoked in me as I read it, a kind of an unavoidable issue that I couldn't refuse to address as I was looking at this, is the question of our relationship, our own personal engagement, our own experience of being part of the body of Christ, being part of the church, to be involved in the ministry of Jesus Christ. What's it like for you? What's it like for me? I think it's true to say that for some, or perhaps for all of us at different times, it's a headache. It's a bellyache. It's an agony. It can be really, really tough. But there are other times where it is quite simply a touch of heaven on earth. And it changes, it depends. We're not in heaven yet. We're not in heaven yet. And it has its seasons. Everything has its season. But how is it for you? How is it for you? Is it something you think, how can I get out of? How can I endure? How can I overcome? I'm not just talking, you know, when I'm talking about church, I'm not talking about Sunday mornings. I'm not just talking about Sunday mornings and Sunday evenings and Tuesday evenings. Or if you're really keen, Friday youth club or toddlers group and our meeting commitments, our commitments to our meetings. But just being in the Spirit, the demands and the call of the Spirit on our lives, to live it out, to work it out in practice amongst ourselves. Yes, of course, in our meetings and when we're together. It's something so special, isn't it, that the Lord keeps drawing his people back together again. He sends us out and he brings us back and he sends us out. It's like breathing, isn't it? It's an exercise, like the life of the body. In and out, out we go into the world. Back we come for refreshment and encouragement. Back out. But sometimes that breathing is, you know, can be painful. It can be painful. But it's wonderful. What is it like when you get out into the open, onto a hillside, and there's just fresh air? It's just wonderful, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing. But why am I saying this in response to this? Why am I saying this? Because of these verses in Philippians. It's the joy in Philippians. The joy that's there. It's tangible. It's delightful. This joy. This is Paul writing. Writing to the church that he planted. He founded this church through God's leading and the Spirit's enabling as he preached Jesus Christ. He planted this church maybe 10 years before he wrote the letter. He's in prison with a man called Timothy, it seems, who is going to be traveling out with the copy of this letter. Once he's released, he's going to be taking this letter back to Philippi. And Luke, we know, was with him at about that time in his life. So these three men... All these three men had been involved in this church for 10 years. He'd founded the church. Luke had pastored the church for 6 and 7 years. Timothy had been the ambassador, going backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards with messages to and from the church, communicating, keeping the lines of communication open, preaching when he came, helping out. These people were absolutely embedded in the life of this church. And you remember, this church, when they went there, when they first started, it was just this tiny group. It was essentially just two families and their dependents. And that was it. And this huge investment of time and energy. And some of it was tough. They were beaten up. Do you remember? They were just beaten in public squares. Paul was. It was a tough place. They invested all this love and life into this little situation. And when they look back on it 10 years later, as Paul writes to them 10 years later, you can see it there in verse 3 and you can see it in verse 4. Every time he thinks about them, he just finds himself thanking God. And in verse 4, in all, do you notice that? In all my prayers for you, without exception, every time he prays for this group of people, for all of you, that means that the whole group, the whole lot of them, no exceptions. Every time I pray for you, I always pray with joy. These people are an absolute delight to him. He loves, doesn't he? He loves this church. He loves these Christians. He loves being involved. They love being involved together. They have something so precious together. I think there's a little cynical voice that would, when somebody starts saying, oh, all these nice things to you, you know, what do you want? That's not the spirit. That's not the spirit. This is true. This is their experience. They loved being part of this thing together. They absolutely loved it. But you know, not all Christian ministry or involvement in Christian life or even involvement in Christian church is a joy and a delight. And I'm not bellyaching out of my own personal experience. I'm speaking to you from the scriptures. Just consider what Paul wrote to the church in Galatia. It was less than complimentary. You foolish Galatians! Who has bewitched you? He's been driven nearly to distraction by their infidelity to the simplicity of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's driving him to distraction. So the idea that all church life is just joy without alloy, you know from Scripture, let alone from experience, is not the case. But when it is good, it is like heaven on earth, isn't it? It's a little touch of heaven on earth. And it is so desirable. So what's the secret? What's the secret to really enjoying, thoroughly enjoying your Christian engagement, your church life, your involvement in ministry? It's in verse 5, isn't it? All these things are, they're not hidden. They're not secrets. They're not secrets. Anybody who spends time in prayer, reading, they'll seek and they'll find the answers to all of these questions. And there it is. So simple. It's so simple. Verse 5. The joy stemmed from their gospel partnership. Their gospel partnership. And that's what I want to think about a little bit right now. Maybe you've had the miserable experience of seeing two friends marry and the inappropriateness of that partnership caused the demise of two individuals with plenty of promise. Maybe you've had friends who've entered into business together, formed partnerships together, and these two guys who got on so well in business and under the pressures of business became enemies of each other as a consequence. It happens. A bad partnership is a terrible, terrible thing. An unbalanced partnership is a terrible thing. But when you see a good partnership, when you see a good marriage, it is an absolute joy to behold, isn't it? There's something about it. It's just got the hand of God on it. It's a wonderful thing to behold. Or even in sports, at the wickets, You've got two men at either end, and they form a partnership with each other, and they have an understanding of one another, and they work together without communicating very much. And they can go on and on and on, and the crowd will sit there in the sun for hour after hours watching these people just working out their relationship, their partnership in public. And it's a delight, an absolute delight. Marx met Spencer's, and the consequences are being enjoyed by countless thousands around the world. Good partnerships, good partnerships. So what do we need if we're going to firstly, a good partnership? Because these are the two things, gospel partnership. Let's just think about partnership for a moment. I think there are two elements. One is that it has to be a balanced arrangement. There has to be equality in the arrangement. And secondly, there needs to be unity in the arrangement, which is where we come to the gospel. Is anybody else apart from me stifling in here? All stifling? Shall I turn it down a little bit? Okay. Maybe somebody could tell me who said this. From each, as they are able, to each, as they have need. Can anybody tell me who said that? No? Karl Marx. Oh, we've got one. Well done, John. You get a Mars bar afterwards. Okay. Karl Marx. And millions of people have been affected by this idea. From each as they are able, to each as they have need. But it's hardly his own idea, is it? It's hardly a novel idea. What did John the Baptist say? John the Baptist said, here you go. How many coats have you got? How many coats have you got? Think about this just for a second. How many coats have you got? Have you got more than one? Look at your brother. Has he got a coat at all? Give him one. Give him one. That's the same message, isn't it? Each as they have ability, to each as they have need. There's nothing particularly new or model about that. We see this, one of the most delightful things you read in the book of Acts, chapter 4, verse 32, the picture of the early church. Everybody just giving to each other as they had need. Eating together. They loved each other. They just loved each other. It's that simple. There was nothing forced about it or programmatic about it. They just loved each other. Invite somebody around to your house. I was really encouraged the other day to hear somebody open their doors and invite people over to their house. It's always great for a pastor to hear that people are opening their doors to each other, spending some time together, getting to know one another. Across the aisle, which is really important, isn't it? Because we're to love each other, love for our neighbour, common concern. So Marx really can't take the credit for all of that. But when we're talking about loving each other, I think love, it really only begins, we're not talking about that soppy, sentimental, I'm not being dismissive about that side of love. It's very important to have the emotions, don't get me wrong, especially in the romantic form of love. But it's just fundamentally caring, actually, isn't it? Caring. That's the practical outworking of love, where those feelings, if you have them, or that decision that you have made, is put into practice, and you show practical care and concern for the people around you. That's necessary, isn't it? This is the balance side of an arrangement. It's more than just sentiment. You can't just say in your heart, I love you, and not do anything about it. Not show it in any way, shape, or form. Imagine for a moment a situation where, and we get encouraged a lot about this, young people get encouraged to think about the jobs they want to do for their whole lives. I don't know, we've all got different jobs in this room. Everybody's encouraged. Do something you like. Do something you'll enjoy. Give yourself to something that you're going to be find fulfilling. Yes, we all basically teach this, don't we? But the problem is, imagine if all of us just did what we liked and what was fulfilling and what we enjoyed. Guess what? There would be absolutely mountains of work to be done, left undone, wouldn't there? It would be just, the people would have to do it. Mountains of things would have to be done. The truth is, if we're going to have a balanced partnership, we can't just do what we like all the time. We can't have what we want all the time. It doesn't work. It builds a completely unbalanced relationship. It's completely unbalanced. We have to also roll up our sleeves and do the things we don't like, because that is love in action. That's showing that you care. That's showing that you care. So, we can, Mark's just trying to get everybody to share everything else with everybody else, and but you still have to find out, well, why? Why should I do this? Why should I share like this? Why should I invite this person who I hardly know across to my house? Why should I form these relationships? Why should I wash my friend's, this man's feet? Why should I do the dirty job? Why should I do the washing up? Why should I do all these things? What motivates us to do this? We read in the book of Proverbs that unless two people agree together, they can't walk together. Have you read that? Disagreements arise. You've got two people. They both love walking. They love walking. They've got all the kit. One of them's got all the maps. The other one's got rucksacks, and he's got sticks, and he's got a GPS and all the rest of it. They've got all the kit. They've both got the same passion. But when they sit down together and say, well, where should we go today? Well, if they both decide to go in opposite directions, it doesn't matter how willing they are to walk together and to share their stuff with each other and have this partnership and do it all together. If they're going in different directions, it's not going to happen, is it? And that's ultimately the downfall of communism. It was all just materialistic. It was just sharing out material things so everybody had the same things. But the heart, the desire, the motivation just wasn't there. People have got their own separate agendas. The whole thing just ends up collapsing. If you're going to have balance, there has to be a pivot. There has to be a middle point on which everything else hinges and rests. I know that if all of us in this room all had exactly the same amount of money, and exactly the same amount of food, and exactly the same clothes and all the rest of it, would that honestly make us all happy? Would we all find absolute fulfillment in that? It's not an end in itself. Don't get me wrong. There are poor people who need our help. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think that's just the answer in total. We have to have something in common. Verse 5 tells us what these people in Philippians had. They had the gospel in common, didn't they? They really did. Because it's not just enough to love each other. We also need to know where we're going. What's our destiny? How are we to live? We need God. We need God. And the gospel brings us into relationship with God. It brings us into relationship with God through Christ, through Jesus, and what he's done on the cross. And Jesus has to be the absolute center. When he is the absolute center and everything else is balanced around that, you have this gospel partnership. When people are willing to serve and love each other for Christ's sake, together, for his glory, you get this joy. That's where the joy comes from. Do you think it's possible to be satisfied as a Christian outside of the gospel? Really, really content and happy as a believer outside of the gospel? I'm taught from scripture that Christianity is first and foremostly an experience. We are joined by the Spirit to God. We are made alive to God. He makes us alive to himself. We are born again. It's a supernatural, it's a miracle of God. And people who have no natural connection whatsoever are united and connected through Christ. which is then confirmed to us by the word. And we're converted because our spirit is also already disposed to hear the word, and we feed on it and it teaches us and fills us, and we are converted. Our mind comes over until we confess, yes, I've learned that Jesus Christ is Lord, and submit to his will and into his ways. And it makes me ask the question, that was the problem with the Galatians. They were drifting away from the gospel. They were drifting away from the truth. I can't see how a Christian who spiritually is born again and made for fellowship with God can ever be truly, finally happy and satisfied outside of that relationship. And so many people, and we all at times, settle for less. We can settle for less. We can settle for situations where we have a good relationship with others and we get on terribly well and there's a lot of mutual understanding and communication, but the gospel is set to one side. And that will never satisfy. That will never produce this spiritual kind of joy that Paul was experiencing there. Or you sadly have these situations where the gospel is being preached and proclaimed, but you're amongst a group of people who are cold and indifferent and unmoved. And apparently there's no fruit or evidence that the message is being received. The gospel is there, but there's no partnership. But when you get the two together, it's a truly wonderful thing, isn't it? I didn't say it very clearly the other night, but you can't join a message, but you can join a church, can't you? You can join a church that is united by that message. People are living it out, putting it in practice. That's a proposition. That's a real proposition, isn't it? If I had the choice between being in a group of people that I really, really got on with and the gospel was diminished, and a group of people I didn't get on so well with but the gospel was being proclaimed, oh, it's a tough one, isn't it? You've got to go with the gospel, though. Because in the end, that's the pivot. That's the pivot. But I don't know about you, but I want it all. I want it all. I always have. And I think I always will. And every time I compromise and I think, oh, well, you've just got to... Something just won't quite go easy. I'm going to finish up just by saying something about verse 6 very quickly. It says in verse 6, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. And I think a lot of the time that verse has been used as part of a body of teaching to encourage individual Christians that if Christ has begun a work in you personally, individually, if you're born again, that he will take you all the way to heaven. He won't fail you. He'll never let you down. If he started something in your life, he will finish it, and you can trust him. So those times when you're in your Christian life, when you start getting anxious, will I make it to heaven? Will I make it? I'm not good enough. That voice comes in and says, he who began a work in you will complete it. And it gives you a great peace and assurance, doesn't it? But it's interesting, when you see this verse, it's actually being applied to them as a church. He's speaking to them as a body. Christians, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? It's not actually directed to individuals, although the individuals can benefit from it. The reason he is confidently saying about this group of people that he can see, he's confident, being confident of this, he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it, is as a result of the gospel partnership he's been enjoying with them and he's been thanking God for. I mean, you can say with a tiny bit of confidence to some people, you know, God will has started a work in you and be faithful to complete it. But here he's able to confidently say it. And that confidence is because of the gospel partnership that's evident amongst them. The way they work together, the way they serve each other, the way they keep Christ at the center, that gives him incredible confidence that the work that God has begun, he will finish. Because he sees proof, fruit, the signs that God is working in their lives. And that's why you know, that awful thing, I'm not sure where they stand with the Lord. You ever heard that about somebody? Maybe some people would say that about me, I don't know. I'm not sure where he stands with the Lord. That's a terrible thing, isn't it? That's a terrible thing. Do you know where you stand with the Lord? I trust we all know where we stand with the Lord. Does everybody else know? Or at least the people who need to know. Do they know where you stand with the Lord? Is it clear to them? So if they're in conversation saying, that person is a Christian, it's clear from their lifestyle, from their profession, from the spirit that is in evidence in their life. And when you see that in a whole group of people like that, what a great confidence when people are not just quiet. There's nothing wrong with being quiet and introvert as a personality. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about being clear about your faith, making a credible profession of faith. And things like baptism give people opportunity, don't they, to actually show that I believe. Show your faith in coming to the Lord's table, showing that you're persevering and carrying on and want to keep going and want to. There's that desire, all that stuff. And he's able to confidently say that this church, not just as individuals, but this group of people are going to last as a church. They're going to persevere as a church. Because he can see the way that from the very beginning, how they received the gospel and opened their doors. Do you remember how Lydia opened the door to her house and let people come in and have their meetings there? That openness of spirit was there from the beginning. It's continued on. It hasn't changed. And they're all doing it. It's the DNA of the group. That's a church that has got a future. That's a church that doesn't have to worry about will the doors shut? Because Christ is just evidently being loved and enjoyed and worked. What can prevent you? What can stop you? If the money ran out and you couldn't keep your buildings, so what? Church is people. Nothing can stop you. Nothing can stop Christians who just love each other and serve each other and keep Christ at the center of all that they do. There were some churches, weren't there, in the book of Revelations, where he's saying, be careful that you will lose your lampstand, because they're just not living like that. They've just got off the center. The gospel is not the main thing anymore. And that church, there is... The only concern any church ought to have in terms of fear of closure is if the Lord himself shuts it down, just says, this is not my work. I'm just taking my spirit. I'm not pursuing this one anymore. I'm shutting this thing down. But if the Lord is at work and he's been loved and people are serving each other, really, the lease will be renewed and extended indefinitely, world without end, till he comes to judge. And you'll be in no hurry, because the world will be fruitfully abounding praise and thanks to him. So, just let's be prayerful and thoughtful about these things, shall we? How much are you enjoying church? Is it a joy to you? Is it a joy to you? And if it isn't in any way, shape or form, let's look at these two things. Let's look at the partnership side of it. Is there some more partnership that we could be offering? Can we rebalance the partnerships in some way, shape, or form? Or has the gospel slipped from its center in our own personal lives or in the life of the church in one way, shape, or form? So let's just use those two tools, because there is nothing like being part of a great church. It's like a little bit of heaven on earth. So let's just keep that in mind. And never give up and pursue it and enjoy it when it's with us and pursue it when it's not. And in all things, wait on God. Let's bring our young folk back in, if you